of gender, that we would be attentive to pronouns. Now, who would have ever imagined that? And I think it's important to recognize it, not only in terms of the advances that the trans movement has made, but also is evidence that we can dismantle other institutions whose seeming permanence is also a product of ideology. And even as we develop the capacity to think about the damage wrought by racism, we often take shortcuts and we capitulate to heteropatriarchal assumptions that the targets of racism are primarily black men, or ethnocentric assumptions that racism affects exclusively black people. Ron DeSantis, and Ben, thank you for asking us to reflect on what is going on with that. Don't let me characterize him.
Go on.
But I just heard him. I'll tell you that I just heard him, I think it was yesterday, maybe it was the day before, making fun of the fact that queer theory was included under the rubric of the Black Studies Advanced Placement course that you were talking about. You know, he's pretty stupid. One of the things you learn when you really try to engage in a serious process of learning, you learn that the more you learn, the less you know. You know, you learn that there's always so much more to learn, and this government, this. Okay. Absolutely. So, but you know, the and what has he said? I guess they also removed Kimberly Crenshaw, so you're not allowed to talk about intersectionality. But I was just going to say that we have to think about the intersectionality of racism. You know, it's not just about identities. And because this is a historical moment when we are called upon to comprehend the structural, the systemic, the institutional character of racism. And then, okay, I'm just going to call them counter-revolutionaries, right? Because it reminds me so much of the period of radical reconstruction and the responses to it. And following W.E.B. Du Bois, I'm just going to call them the counter-revolutionaries, because they are trying to prevent the progressive developments from transforming our lives. And all he can think about is wokeness. He doesn't even know what wokeness means. But he thinks that black studies will cause white children to feel bad about themselves. I think he must be talking about himself. But in any event, the reason we are witnessing these uproars right now, from DeSantis' strategies in Florida to the actions of the College Board, is that education is integrally related to social change. And this is something Malcolm taught us, both through his words and through his actions. Thanks to Malcolm's decision to teach himself in prison, vast numbers of incarcerated people do the hard work of learning, often learning how to read, as Malcolm did, but certainly learning how to use their intellects. And as a matter of fact, there's probably more intellectual greatness behind bars now than in any other place. We're on the verge of substantial shifts in the way people think about race and racism. And those who want to prevent these shifts from happening are frantically trying to turn back the clock. At least 36 states have adopted or introduced laws that impede educational projects about race and racism. And here in New York, at the end of 2021, Republican lawmakers introduced bills that prevent public schools from providing instruction on structural racism. Even in the most progressive states, I come from California, and most of the times I'm happy to say that I come from, California, first of all, I live in Oakland, and Oakland celebrates May 19th. Oakland and Berkeley. Malcolm X's birthday is an official holiday in both of those cities. But even in the most progressive states, that we see efforts to restrict and confine instruction. California is also, I think, the only state with a statewide ethnic studies curriculum. Yes. But there have been major efforts, vociferous efforts, to prevent the inclusion of Palestine and Palestinians and Palestinian Americans in the curriculum. Amidst all of the pain and suffering produced by the COVID pandemic, and we're not that far removed from that era, this new collective awareness of the structural character of racism was generated. Not that it was a new way of thinking about racism. Scholars like W.E.B. Du Bois pointed this out scores of decades ago. Malcolm talked about institutional change, but the change, as many people have recognized over the decades, is one that involves not so much a shift in subjective attitudes, although that's definitely welcome, but it's about structural transformation. It's not about white people not liking black people or indigenous people or Latinx people. And that will change if there is structural change. But we can treat racism as a character defect or a character flaw and leave the entire systematic structure of racism intact. You know, they talk about racism without the racists. But in the spirit of all of the freedom movements that I tried to evoke at the beginning of my presentation, all of the freedom movements that have preceded us, let us vow never to forget the summer of 2020. It was only 2.5 years ago, and we're already treating it like Yeah, like it's a relic of history. It was 2.5 years ago when we were deep in the throes of the worst crisis most of us can remember, and we collectively experienced the police lynching. The police murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and all of the others that have been referred to. This occurred in the process of also recognizing that communities that were already subject to racism were the ones who were suffering most from the COVID pandemic. A new awareness of the structural racism within the healthcare system, within the privatized healthcare system, within the capitalist healthcare system. Actually, not so much a new awareness, but a collective attentiveness to an idea that scholar activists have been insisting on since the era of radical reconstruction in the aftermath of slavery. And there have been those who have pointed out that racism is connected to capitalism, that capitalism is at its core racial capitalism, and not only here in the U.S. Capitalism was produced by colonialism and slavery. But finally, people seem to get it. Racism does not emanate from the fact that white people don't like black people or indigenous or Latinx or Asian people. It is produced and reproduced structurally, systemically, institutionally. And this was a kind of collective aha moment. And we should never forget that. This is why more people poured out into the streets of this country than ever before in the history. This is why people joined the mobilizations. This is why more white people joined all of the mobilizations. And people were out in the streets even though we did not yet know then how COVID was transmitted. Millions of people poured out into the streets at the risk of their own lives. Demonstrating this new awareness became more important than the lives of individuals. The most remarkable moment in our recent history, maybe even in the history of this country. And this is why DeSantis and others are excising examination of this movement from the school curriculum. And so the stage was set for us to attempt to accomplish what should have been done in the 19th century, in the immediate aftermath of slavery. And it seemed that a good majority of people in this country, people of all racial and ethnic backgrounds, seemed to realize this, to overlay the political context. All of this was happening during the presidency of the person whose name shall not be pronounced during our meeting this evening. Thus the counter-revolution. Thus the attack against critical race theory, which is a serious interdisciplinary field founded on the work of those who were attempting many years ago to understand the way structural racism expressed itself through the law. Yep. Right. So those of you who are interested in history will be utterly struck by all of the parallels between the reaction to radical reconstruction, 1867 to 1877, and what we are currently witnessing. The police murder of Tyre Nichols in the very same city in which Dr. King was assassinated punctuates the message that racism is structural. Awareness of racism is not about making white children feel guilty. It is about recognizing the deep structures of racism in all all of our institutions, regardless of who the individual perpetrators might be. It is a machine, it is a system, it is a culture that is produced and reproduced. And now we know better how to initiate the process of ridding our worlds of racism. We know better than ever before. And I just have a few more words. I want to say it involves standing up against heteropatriarchy. We know that it involves saying no to economic exploitation. We know we cannot exclude any community that suffers from the effects of racism. And this includes Asian Americans, and this includes Arab Americans, this includes Palestinians. We know, finally, that we cannot struggle for human freedom without recognizing that we are all animals and that we must stand in support of our non-human co-inhabitants of this planet. And thank you so much for the beautiful metaphor of the rabbit, the pattern of the rabbit escaping. But I think that we look at simple creatures like ants that are able to entirely transform a place and build these edifices, these architectural edifices, without at all harming the environment. I think we have much to learn from them, that it is possible to benefit from this earth, even to transform it without annihilating the very conditions of future life on this planet. Thank you very much.
Professor Angela Davis, speaking at the Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz Memorial and Educational Center, the site of the Audubon Ballroom in New York City, where Malcolm X was assassinated February 21st, 1965. Angela Davis was speaking on the 58th anniversary of his death this year. Malcolm was born 98 years ago today, May 19th, 1925. When we come back, we hear civil rights attorney Ben Crump and then Malcolm X in his own words. Stay with us. Coltrane. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We continue to look at the life and legacy of Malcolm X, born 98 years ago today, as we turn to civil rights attorney Ben Crump, representing Malcolm's family in a $100 million wrongful death lawsuit against the FBI, the CIA, New York City and state, and the New York police, as well as the district attorney's office, for concealing evidence of their involvement in Malcolm X's 1965 assassination. Three men were convicted of his murder, two of them fully exonerated in 2021. Ben Crump spoke on February 21st at the Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz Memorial and Educational Center, housed in the former Audubon Ballroom where Malcolm was shot dead on that day in 1965.
I think what would have come of Malcolm had they not 58 years ago on this day assassinated one of the greatest thought leaders that was ever produced in the 21st century. How much more Malcolm had to give the world? And I often think about that, Dr. Davis, when I think about Trayvon. Yeah. What would have come of 17-year-old Trayvon had he not been shot in the heart by some wannabe cop? What would have become Mark Breonna Taylor, this queen who was just 2 semesters from getting her college degree, being a nurse, but she was executed with 9 bullets in her home while she was practically naked? What would have become of Botham Jean, young black man who was in his own apartment, minding his own business, when this white policewoman came and shot him while he was eating ice cream and watching TV, and then she had the audacity to say, Gina, self-defense. It was self-defense. But Tamara, it wasn't her house. It was Botham's house. And so we have to continue to stand up, speak up, and fight for our children and our loved ones. Because if we don't fight for our children and our loved ones, we can't expect nobody else to fight for our children and loved ones. And finally, I think about the Shabazz Center and the objectives of trying to make sure we educate the future generations with the history that has been contributed, Rob, by our ancestors. And I am ever reminded that we have to fight racism and discrimination, Dominique, wherever it rears its ugly head. And so, in light of all of those high-profile police cases we fight, there are other battles that are just as important, whether it's medical racism with Henrietta Lacks, whether it's the $100 million lawsuit filed on behalf of Malcolm X's daughters, because we can never let them think that we will forget about Malcolm X. We will continue to fight every day. And we have to fight those who would try to rob our children and all children of learning about black history, like our governor in Florida, Ron DeSantis, who is trying to prohibit the teaching of advanced placement African American studies. And so I am on record, Attorney O'Neill, if he does not capitulate and allow the teaching of black history, we're going to sue him. We're going to sue him because, as Dr. Carter G. Woodson said, also known as the father of black history, if a race does not have a history, if it has no traditions that are respected and taught to the young people, then it becomes a negligible factor in the thought of the world and become in danger of being exterminated. And we refuse to let Governor DeSantis exterminate black history in Florida. We refuse to let anybody exterminate black history in any state in the United States of America, because black history is American history. And not only do black children need to know about black history, but white children especially need to know about black history. And so we will fight, because our children need to know that our history made this country what it is today.
was civil rights attorney Ben Crump speaking on February 21st on the 58th anniversary of the assassination of Malcolm X at the Audubon Ballroom, now the Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz Memorial and Educational Center. We end today's show with Malcolm X in his own words, speaking in 1964.
One of the first things that the independent African nations did was to form an organization called the Organization of African Unity. The purpose of our organization of Afro-American Unity, which has the same aim and objective, to fight whoever gets in our way. To bring about the complete independence of people of African descent here in the Western Hemisphere and first here in the United States, and bring about the freedom of these people by any means necessary. That's our motto. The purpose of our organization is to start right here in Harlem, which has the largest concentration of people of African descent that exists anywhere on this earth. There are more Africans here in Harlem than exist in any city on the African continent, because that's what you and I are, Africans. The Charter of the United Nations, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the Constitution of the United States, and the Bill of Rights are the principles in which we believe, and that these documents, if put into practice, represent the essence of mankind's hopes and good intentions, desirous that all Afro-American people and organizations should henceforth unite so that the welfare and well-being of our people will be assured. We are resolved to reinforce the common bond of purpose between our people by submerging all of our differences and establishing non-sectarian constructive programs for human rights. We hereby present this charter, number one, the establishment. The Organization of Afro-American Unity shall include all people of African descent in the Western Hemisphere. In essence, what it is saying, instead of you and me running around here seeking allies in our struggle for freedom in the Irish neighborhood or the Jewish neighborhood or the Italian neighborhood, we need to seek some allies among people who look something like we do. And once we get their allies, it's time out for you and me to stop running away from the wolf right into the arms of the fox, looking for some kind of help. That's a drag. Number two, self-defense. Since self-preservation is the first law of nature, we assert the Afro-American's right to self-defense. The Constitution of the United States of America clearly affirms the right of every American citizen to bear arms. And as Americans, we will not give up a single right guaranteed under the Constitution. The history of unpunished violence against our people clearly indicates that we must be prepared to defend ourselves, or we will continue to be a defenseless people at the mercy of a ruthless and violent racist mob.
Malcolm X, speaking in 1964. He was born 98 years ago today, on May 19th, 1925. Go to democracynow.org to see the full event with Dr. Angela Davis, Ben Crump, Malcolm X's daughter, Ilyasa Shabazz, and many others at the Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz Memorial and Educational Center, the site of the Audubon Ballroom in New York City, where Malcolm X was gunned down February 21st, 1965. And that does it for our show. A very happy birthday to Samin Farkandeh, Eli Putnam, and Tamari Astudio. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. online at cjsf.ca. Broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. Home of McFog the Dog.